Thank you very much, and thank you for coming to this event. Music was part of Regina College from the very start, but art in the sense of the visual arts was not. That came a little bit later, about 1914. But in 1910, when the Methodist Church was planning to build Regina College, and they were defining the purpose of the institution, this is what they said. The immediate and primary necessity is for a preparatory residential school for both sexes, offering courses in collegiate first-year university and possibly second university year work, music and business, an elementary course for older students who have not been able to obtain a good public school education. So that was the mandate, and you notice that music is mentioned. So when the college opened in the fall of 1911, September 1911, there were 27 students in the original class. And then slowly, as the semester wore on, or the term wore on, more students came in from the countryside as the harvest was over, and additional students were added to the original 27. And at that time, there was already a conservatory of music, so it started at the very same time that the college itself started. The director was Dr. John Edward Hodgson, who is the man at the top and to the right. He was 38 years old when he came to Regina. He was from England. He had a doctorate in music from Durham University, and he had been organist at Lansdowne Church in Glasgow. He was described in the leader as a very short, chunky, rosy-faced Englishman. There were four other instructors or faculty members in that original year in 1911. Franklin Loback, who was the organist at St. Paul's Anglican Pro Cathedral and the founder of the City Symphony Orchestra, was one of the faculty members, as was W.H. Buckley, who was organist and choir master at Metropolitan Methodist Church, and he's the individual just below Dr. Hodgson. In addition, and these are not in the picture, there were Miss Camilla Kramer and Miss Mary Monroe, and they taught piano and violin. By the end of the first year, there were already 109 students enrolled in the conservatory, and quite a wide array of courses offered. This is from the 1913 calendar. Promising courses in piano, vocal physiology, voice culture, solo singing, organ, American organ, violin, viola, cello, double bass, flute, oboe, clarinet, bassoon, trumpet, trombone, other orchestral instruments, composition, harmony, counterpoint, form, fugue, and orchestration, choral and orchestral conducting, and music history. Unfortunately, after this strong start, there was a bit of a setback, because in 1913 there was a recession, and the newly founded college had some hard times, in fact, desperate times. The college didn't get any money from the provincial government, and it got some land from the city government, which it had to sell to afford to build the college building and to obtain the site along Wascana Lake. And it had donations and it had tuition fees. But with the recession, the people who had promised to give money to the college had to back out. So they had all these sort of promissory notes that they couldn't collect on. So they told the faculty members at the conservatory that they could no longer receive a flat salary, that they would only get two-thirds of the fees that students were willing to pay for lessons, and then one-third would go to the conservatory itself. The Board of Governors apologized, We submit this to you well aware that legally it might not be quite correct, but feeling that we are doing better by our staff in offering something than in continuing to promise salaries which we assuredly will not be able to pay. Then the board in 1915 informed Dr. Hodgson, the director of the conservatory, that henceforth the conservatory would be placed on a strictly paying basis. And I interpret that to mean that all the money would have to come from the fees the students were paying. When he objected, he was given his walking papers. So he exits the college in 1915. Now after that, there were two conservatory directors that had relatively short terms, Golan Houle from 1915 to 1917 and Harold Holgate, 1917 to 1920. And here we have a program of a recital that was given by the pupils of Harold Holgate. The date is the 8th of June, 1916. So we can look at the items that were performed that evening, and you can see that it's a fairly wide-ranging program, very junior students. For example, there's Kulau Sonatine by Master Lloyd Brown, which sounds like a young boy, to more senior students. Miss Florence Wagner is playing Prelude and Fugue in B-flat, Bach, and also Beethoven's Sonata. So that dates back to 19, and this is in the collection of the University of Regina Archives. The next two directors after Houle and Holgate, there was Frederick George Kilmaster, who was from 1920 to 28, and Cyril Hampshire from 1928 to 1935. And these were probably some of the best years of the conservatory, the 1920s. Enrollment went from 387 in 1920 to 501 in 1928. By 1923, the faculty numbered 12. And I just want to mention two, because they were there for quite a long time and had quite distinguished careers. The first was W. Knight Wilson, who was at the conservatory from 1923 to 1955. Except for the war years when he directed army bands across the country. He had been first violin in the Scottish Symphony Orchestra, and while in Regina, he was the conductor of the Regina Symphony Orchestra, as well as teacher in violin and viola, and conductor of the Capitol Theater Orchestra, which I think means with the silent movies, they had an orchestra to accompany the films. He turned the Regina College Junior Orchestra into, quote, perhaps the finest juvenile orchestra ever heard in Western Canada. Mind you, that's a quote from the conservatory itself. Now, the other person is Dan Cameron, who was also a long-serving member of the conservatory faculty. He taught voice. And he was, and I'm quoting here Robin Swales, the linchpin of the musical life of the city. Involved in so many organizations, the Amateur Operatic Society, Ladies Bach Choir, the Philharmonic Society, the Orchestral Society, the Regina Male Voice Choir, the Regina Music Teachers Association, Vice President of the Canadian Federation of Music Teachers. He had a weekly music column in The Leader, which he wrote for years and years, and he tended to get off topic onto all sorts of topics because he had opinions on many things. One thing I noticed, he detested jazz, and I couldn't quite figure out why he was so obsessed with how awful jazz was, but it was a bugbear of his. He seemed to me something of a traditionalist. Now, this golden era of the 20s was presided over by President Stapleford, whose forte was raising money. He was just terrific at raising money for the college. And he used the conservatory kind of as a money-raising tool. For example, every fall he had a big fundraising campaign where they would actually divide the city into sectors, and there would be a captain for each area, and the whole city would be canvassed, or at least the businesses in the city would be canvassed, and people would be invited to contribute donations to sustain and improve Regina College. And this fundraising campaign was always kicked off by a free concert that was given in Metropolitan Methodist Church and later Dark Hall. And the faculty were expected to perform, and this is a program that from the performance of November 2nd, 1925, which would be about the time Stapleford was hitting his stride as college president. And when you look at the actual, what was performed, you see that midway through the program, there's a break. And it says, address by Dr. E.W. Stapleford. And that's when he would make his pitch for money. You've heard this good music, now pay, please. The other thing that I noticed about this program is W. Knight Wilson's orchestra is performing. You might not be able to read it from there, but it does say the Regina College Teenage Orchestra. They open up the program, and teenage is not yet one word. They use teenage as two different words. Also, this concert was always broadcast over CKCK radio. Now, the other point I'd like to make in, along these lines is that every college function was involved music. The annual spring banquet, which was for the students, the student Christian movement fireside meetings. They had a chapel of 20 minutes every morning, breaking up the classes in the morning, which was voluntary. You didn't have to go, but you could go if you wanted. And one of the chapel periods each week was devoted to conservatory faculty or students performing music. Music poured out of the open windows of the studios and permeated the college. In the words of one former student, with open windows that caught the music of the practice corridors, many of us studied with the air heavy from Percy Grainger's Country Gardens. Also, the conservatory was the focal point for the musical life of the city. As we saw when we referred to Dan Cameron, the faculty were very involved in the community. They led the major church choirs, some of the major church choirs. They conducted the symphony orchestra, directed the Philharmonic Society, and gave of their talents to many of the musical organizations in the city. And also, the conservatory was a magnet for world-renowned artists who came to perform in Regina in the 1920s and 30s, such as Fritz Kreisler, Amelita Galli-Curci, who was one of the leading operatic sopranos of the 1920s, performed regularly at the Metropolitan Opera of New York, Marcel Dupré, and Lawrence Tibbett. Very big names that you wouldn't have thought would be in Regina, which then had maybe 30 to 35,000 people. Also, another aspect of the impact of the conservatory was that the graduates then went back to their small towns in different parts of the province, and they taught music lessons, and so this musical influence radiated throughout the province. Now, in 1924, Francis Dark, who was a local businessman, conveyed to the college property and securities valued at $100,000. Which in our money would be about $1.5 million. And he said it was for the purpose of erecting a music and art building. When the contract was let, it turned out that it was $124,000, $124,185 to be exact dollars. And so they're short about $24,000. And Francis Dark says, well, I'll just give the extra $24,000. So he gave the entire amount that was required for the building. A Chicago philanthropist, Samuel Insull, agreed to provide the seats, and Ambrose Froom, who's a member of the Board of Governors of the college, provided the money for the Cassavant pipe organ. So this building was officially opened on the 6th of January, 1929,